Well, hello, everyone. This is John Byrne with Poets and Quants. Welcome to Business Casual, our weekly podcast with my co-hosts, Maria Wickville and Caroline Diarte Edwards. I'll remind you once again, Maria is the founder of Applicant Lab. You can check it out. And Caroline, of course, the former head of admissions at NCIAD and a co-founder of Fortuna Admissions. A big report came out in the past week. This is really the single biggest survey of graduate business candidates that is done in the year. It's done by the folks who give you the GMAT, the Graduate Management Admission Council. In this case, they have surveyed more than 4,000 candidates. And there's some interesting takeaways from the latest study. We did a piece on four big takeaways, and then we also did a piece, so this is two stories, on the primary takeaway from this year's report. That story basically said that more candidates really are interested in diversity and inclusion and sustainability, and they crave more classroom content on artificial intelligence. We've talked endlessly about these topics on our podcast, so no surprise there. And we know there has been a stampede of attention in the business school community to diversity and inclusion, sustainability, and artificial intelligence. In fact, just this week, the Wall Street Journal on their front page had a piece on business schools going gaga over AI. But our four takeaways from the GMAC report, I'm just going to go over them. We're going to discuss them in some detail and get into the weeds on some of this. The two-year MBA is once again seen as the preferred program type, regaining the top spot from the one-year accelerated MBA, while the master's in management has gained in popularity. Some of these differences are quite slight. In the case of the two-year MBA, we're talking about like 2 percentage points. So you could even argue that it's within the margin of error for this sample size and survey. Nonetheless, it was a big surprise last year when the one-year MBA seemed to eclipse the two-year traditional MBA program as the program of choice. The second big takeaway, candidates want more flexibility in how they learn with hybrid programs gaining in popularity. This is not a surprise. You know, most of the MBA students in the world are actually enrolled in part-time programs. And that part-time grind, going to class 2 times a week after a long workday, is just something that people aren't willing to put up with anymore. So while people do like in-person learning in these part-time programs, they like the flexibility of having the option of also taking these classes online, particularly the electives. So that came through loud and clear in the latest survey data. Another piece of takeaway, consulting is once again the most desired career destination of prospective B-School students. We know that consulting vacuums up a massive percentage of MBA graduates from full-time programs, and that's no surprise. What is kind of a surprise is, in fact, in the last couple of years, you know, people who have been hired by consulting firms have found their start dates delayed significantly because there just wasn't enough work for them. It hasn't dulled the consulting industry's appetite for hiring MBAs, but I think that the hiring is down a little bit and delayed for those who do land the job. The fourth takeaway we're mentioning is mobility shifts as affordability concerns spike. So the increasing cost of graduate management programs is leading more people to basically stay in their home countries and get a degree there, as opposed to traveling to the U.S., Europe, Canada, or elsewhere. One example in our story is in India, a majority of candidates for the first time last year said they plan to apply domestically. That's up from 41% in 2022 to 53%. Maria, what do you think of all this?
Wow. I mean, there's certainly no shortage of interesting data to dig through, but As you were speaking and as we were chatting before we started recording, I wonder if one of the primary drivers in a lot of these shifts is this perception of overall weakness in the global economy. So, for example, a two-year program versus a one-year program, all else being equal, the biggest difference in addition to the cost is that you get that internship, which might help you either make a career pivot or land a slightly better job after you graduate. Perhaps if I'm a little less certain about my career prospects, I might find more stability or more potential benefits to taking the two-year program. Similarly, I wonder if these perceptions about the economy might be driving why people from other countries may want to stay closer to home, and why the affordability of the degree may be something that's coming more and more into play, this perceived ROI or value for money. So I feel like perhaps maybe that might be a key driver that then filters out throughout a number of these different factors.
Yep, true. Caroline, I know you're always interested, especially in the European programs, given your NCIAD background. What's your take on some of this data?
Yeah, I do think it's interesting to see the prevalence of the domestic programs. And I think that makes a lot of sense in a country like India, where, you know, 20 years ago, MBA candidates, or 10 years ago, might have thought that to have a successful career, they really needed to get out of India, go and study somewhere else, and be able to work in another country. Now, thank goodness, you know, the Indian economy has grown so much. There are tremendous opportunities domestically. And so they feel less of a need to go to the US or Europe for their education in order to also then springboard into an opportunity outside of their home country, because there are fantastic opportunities and maybe even better opportunities for them domestically. Sure. So I think that that's playing into this. I think that also just geopolitical conflicts are over the past few years have made perhaps reduced people's inclination to be globally mobile, which is a shame, right? I think that the appeal of a very international MBA program today is perhaps not the same as it was 10 years ago. I think that candidates are less excited about the idea of being immersed in a very international environment and being able to work in different countries and have a really globally mobile career than they were in the past. And you know, I think that's really to our detriment, unfortunately. And that also plays out in the data that we see in this report, with Chinese candidates being less likely to come to the US. You know, that reflects the strain in relationships, or the very difficult relationship between China and US. So that drop, to a certain extent, in global mobility, I think, you know, is playing out in this data. And I think that that's really a shame, because the more that we get people to study together from across the world, the more you realize we have in common, the better we're able to work together across borders. And I think that is a positive for all of our society. So while I understand while people are perhaps staying local or attending local programs because of those opportunities and difficulties of perhaps moving across borders these days, I think that that's also a shame. And for example, you know, INSEAD, if you look at the 2024 class, they have reduced the class size, right? So the class of 2024 is a smaller class than the previous few years. And I think that that reflects the fact that fewer people are looking to, for example, there are fewer people from Europe or the US who want to go and study in Singapore, because then they want to get a great job in Shanghai or in Hong Kong, in the same way that people did when I was studying at INSEAD 20 years ago. Those opportunities just aren't there to the same extent as they used to be. In the past, it was much easier to get a job in Singapore as an international student. You could study at INSEAD and stay and get a fantastic job in Singapore. It's much, much harder to do that. It's much harder to get the visa these days. And so I think that there is less international mobility to a certain extent.
That's true. And the other issue here, too, for a lot of students who come from areas where the pay is not nearly what it is in the U.S. and Europe, to go to a U.S. or European school, you really need, when you graduate, to work there to make make sense of it, right? So if you go back to India or you go back to China, after paying the high tuition rates, it's really difficult to pay back those loans without a U.S. or European salary. And that's always been tricky. I will say there's also some kind of contradictions in a way, right? Because the survey found a very strong preference for diversity and inclusion. Yet in the case of India, you have a majority of candidates now who would prefer to study domestically. And there's absolutely no diversity in those classrooms other than work diversity. And even that's very limited because, as we know, so many people in India do engineering degrees, undergrad, and end up in MBA or graduate management programs. So even there, you have very little diversity. And the beauty of a European or U.S. program for someone from India is you get true diversity. The other issue, frankly, is that even though there may be a preference to study in India among people who are there, the truth is that the world is flooded with very good Indian candidates. In most schools, if you looked at their acceptance rates for the number of Indian candidates in their pools, it's significantly lower than either their average acceptance rate or the acceptance rates for many other students, because you don't, in crafting a class, you don't want to have 50% Indian, although, based on stats and accomplishments, that would be very easy to have, but you would really, it would really undermine your ability to craft a diverse and really interesting class that bring a lot of various experiences into discussions. Now, Maria, being the detective that she is, took a sort of a microscope to some of these findings. What'd you find in the weeds that was interesting to you, Maria, in this report?
One of the things that really did jump out at me was the preference for candidates from Africa to study in Canada. That was really surprising to me. I mean, Canada makes a ton of sense as a destination for a lot of people for a lot of reasons, right? The degrees tend to be 1 year in length. Canadian immigration policy is famously friendly, at least that's the stereotype. And so I can see Canada being very popular. And yet Canada was less than 10% for candidates from China, around 9%, 6% from India, and 26% of candidates from Africa were interested in studying in Canada. So that's quite a pretty significant difference. And so that was something that kind of, really jumped out at me as surprising.
Yeah, and the Canadian programs, they're much less expensive than the U.S. programs. I think they're more on the order of some of the European programs in terms of pricing. Canadian country is very welcoming to immigration. It's known as one of the big pro-immigration countries, so it's relatively easy to get a visa and a job in Canada. So what's interesting about Africa is that for years, the former dean of Oxford, Saeed, made it a strategic point to go and recruit candidates from Africa for his MBA program at Oxford. His thinking on this was simple. Over the next century, Africa is going to merge as one of the true major big economies on the order of a China and a US and a Europe. And he wants to be ahead of the curve. And I think a lot of schools have really made that an effort as well. So it's kind of really interesting that more African candidates are interested in going to Canada. It makes me wonder if the Canadian schools are adopting similar strategies to what Peter did at Oxford. Caroline, any last thoughts?
I think the data there on the importance of equity inclusion, the importance of sustainability is very interesting. And they've got some nice tables on by region and also showing to what extent those factors are a deal breaker for candidates in looking at programs. And so DEI is rates very highly as a deal breaker for most of the regions, actually, right? So that's actually good to see. It's 50% or above, and often sort of two-thirds of candidates are saying that that's a deal breaker. And the importance of sustainability, and about a third of candidates globally saying that that is critical and it's a deal breaker for them when they're looking at schools. So that's good for a school like INSEAD or Ross, as we were talking to the other day, where they have really taken that very seriously and integrated that into the curriculum. One thing that did make me scratch my head a bit was in your article, you flagged that two-fifths of candidates are saying that AI is essential to a business school curriculum. What are the other three-fifths thinking?
Out of the sand. Yeah. That's true, right? Yeah. It is amazing. I had a conversation with probably the most popular executive coach in the world, Marshall Goldsmith, the other day. And he has a couple of Indian admirers who have invested millions of dollars in creating a bot that really, what it does, it takes account of all the books that he's written, all the articles that he's written, and you can ask the bot any question, and up will pop the answer from Marshall Goldsmith, but it's really not Marshall Goldsmith, it's his bot. But it's basically, you know, using all of the stuff that he's written and during the course of his life to basically give these answers. And it's pretty amazing. I can only imagine the application of this kind of software for other teaching and learning exercises by well-known professors. I can see a Michael Porter bot in the future on strategy and value creation and globalization. You know, it's really quite amazing. AI is, we have only seen so little. Over the next 5 years, it's really, truly going to explode in ways that are going to blow our minds, I think.
So I just wanted to tack on to that, though. One interesting thing in this report was that if you look at the career preferences, they break it out by millennials versus Gen Z. And everyone kind of has roughly the same interest in going into consulting, but there's about a 10% difference. More millennials want to go into technology than Gen Z, and more Gen Z want to go into finance versus technology. So that's interesting. I would have thought that in general, first of all, Gen Z as the younger generation who were, you know, raised by phones, that their interest in technology would be just as high, if not higher. And then also, given what you guys were just saying about AI, if anything, I would think that they would be more attuned to the fact that technology is probably going to be a pretty dynamic. I mean, every industry is going to be dynamic and every industry is going to face upheaval. But I was just surprised. That was another little bar chart that kind of jumped out at me as surprising, that there was not far fewer, but 45% interest among millennials versus around 35% interest in Gen Z for technology. So we'll have to see what happens in the next coming years.
Yeah, these reports from GMAC are fascinating because they really, you know, slice the data in so many different ways for different groups of people, generations, programs, geographies. It's kind of fascinating material. And so if you want to have a look at this, take a look at 4 takeaways from GMAC's 2024 Prospective Students Report at Poets and Quants. We also did the story, the other story that I mentioned earlier, GMAC survey, B-School candidates want equity and inclusion programs overwhelmingly. And if you go into those stories, there's a link to the full report. And you'll find lots of really intriguing detail on graduate management education. Hey, thanks for listening. This is John Byrne with Poets and Quants.